All right, here we go on a Friday. It is Cody and Gold, a Red Friday in Kansas City. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. It's Friday the 13th, too, Cody.
Dun, dun, dun!
Who knows? Who knows what we have
anything
in store
could happen
today.
At my poker game in my house tonight.
Anything
you
could
don't
happen
know.
In the next 4 hours. You never know.
I worked with a person in the restaurant world. His name was Kai. Very nice gentleman, incredible server, way better than me at it. He would not work Friday the 13th.
Really?
He like once got in an argument. He was the nicest person on the planet. With a boss, he's like, I've never worked a Friday the 13th and I won't. It was all about like bad mojo. He thought the customers were crazy. He would not work Friday the 13th under any circumstances.
So he just thought something terrible was going to happen at the restaurant.
Yes.
But whenever you mention the name Kai, and I'm sure there's someone named Kai that's listening, all I can think of, you guys remember and there's a Netflix documentary, I think it's on Netflix now, the Kai, the hatchet wielding like hitchhiker guy. Remember that viral thing for a while?
Yeah, I remember that.
He's like, bam! He's like, what he's like, bam, 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 or whatever.
That's exactly what you're
talking about. When you say Kai.
His energy was the exact opposite of that, the Kai I knew.
When you say Kai, that's all I can think of. And that I think there's a Netflix documentary or something that's been on the last year or so, and it talks about, like, remember, he ended up, like, allegedly, like, killing somebody. The whole story, like, came, it started like a feel-good story, and then it turns out he.
There was a whole Netflix documentary on it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that was good.
Yep. But that's what I think of when you say Kai.
Oh, man. The different Kai.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no personal qualms over Friday the 13th. Do you feel the need to watch like a Friday the 13th movie or something?
No. Honestly, I didn't even realize it was that until somebody texted me something this morning and then something this week, and I was looking at my calendar to see the date, and I'm like, Friday the 13th. Here we are. Anyway, it's a Red Friday in Kansas City. Hope everybody's having a good start to the day. You can text us, as always, on the Jay's Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. We got the fan club coming up today, 1 o'clock hour. Rob Collins.
We sticking with that name?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Rob Collins from Fox 4 going to join us in studio, talk a little bit about his view on this week in sports and heading into the Chiefs-Bengals game. But we do start with Thursday Night Football. Of course, yes, the Bills were dominant. We're going to discuss them a little bit later on. But the story is Tua Tagovailoa, who basically at this point, I think, has restarted the conversation that everybody had 2 years ago, where unfortunately he gets hit as he's scrambling. He's trying to do anything to help his team win. Natural instinct, I'm sure, kicks in. He's done a good job recently all last year in protecting himself. This was one play where his team wasn't playing well, and so he tried to make something happen. He gets hit, and immediately you see the fencing response again with his hands. He, of course, is diagnosed with a concussion, and he's being evaluated. And as of today, we have no clue on a long-term timeline, and he's going through tests and everything like that. Is he going to play this year? Is he ever going to play? And I think we all have our own reaction to it, and we immediately, I feel like, say, well, then
it's easy. You get $100 million and never work again. I'll take that deal.
Just don't play. Yeah, because the deal he signed has $167 million guaranteed, $43 million of which has already been paid. Basically, the signing bonus. If he's medically cleared and then retires, he foregoes $124 million. I think it's very easy for you and I and a lot of people listening to sit here and say, well, dude, you've had four, including the undocumented one, but four concussions. We've seen how your body reacts. You're very fortunate that you do have still the ability to walk. You're a young man that has a lot of money, that has a couple kids now as well. And it's easy to say, well, just take the 90 mil, man, and be done. I think it's so easy for us to say. But you also have to view it from his point of view, probably, which is, I played football my entire life. This is all he knows. His brother plays football. His whole family has been around football. This is what he wants to do. And it's got to be just a really, really challenging decision to make, because he might get cleared anyway to play. And so for those that are
he
like,
probably will somehow.
Because my first reaction is like, hey, the NFL should just never let him play again. Like, why would the NFL want that spotlight again? That here we are talking about safety protocols in the league and concussions and the backlash the league gets anytime this stuff comes up. So part of me is just like, hey, the NFL shouldn't allow him. But at the same time, if a doctor is going to clear him, which is probably what's going to happen.
Probably.
Who am I to say he should not play? If at some point, it is his decision to risk, his life, I guess, to play the sport.
It's really difficult because if you oversimplify it, then you're just like, well, quit. You can have $100 million in your pocket, $50 million in your pocket. You can walk away from the sport. They're going to owe it to you anyway. you know, just get out while you can still remember your kids' names or, you know, any of the things that like concern you over somebody having those jobs. But the other part is that's how athletics work. Like, I'm sorry that you're like, this is my whole life. Yeah, it also was the kid who is 27, who's been grinding on the practice squad, who can't make it anymore just because he's not talented enough. I'm sorry that you're talented enough, but you're not healthy enough to play. But people's careers end whose entire lives have been focused around athletics all the time. All the time. And while it is not an easy decision.
Yeah, but if the doctors clear him, I mean, you're giving an example of like, hey, physically he can't play. The doctors, if they clear him, they're saying physically he can play. That's why it's a very complicated
I know,
situation.
But like, I just, at what point can you believe that that is true? Like, I mean, truthfully, like, because a doctor could clear you and say like, you're good to go. No headaches, no blurry vision. You say you feel fine. Symptoms gone. Good to go, Tua. But I don't think there's a single neurologist on the planet that wouldn't tell you repeated concussions are bad for your brain.
Well, I think they had that conversation in 2022. Reports have been that him and his family did have real conversations about his future and his long-term health, and ultimately he made a decision to play. I mean, they've had that conversation. And by the way, just because the doctor clears him doesn't mean that the doctor doesn't warn him of the
also risks.
He plays in the National Football League. He is playing football. I think every single player knows the potential risk. They all are choosing, whether they have a history of concussions or not, they all are choosing to risk their body, risk their life theoretically in some form or fashion because of some of the potential hits. They understand that risk. And if you're the NFL, I don't think the NFL is going to flat out say, we just aren't going to let you play our sport.
Somebody from the 816 said, when will the league make real changes to prevent these constant injuries? The thing is,
he didn't slide.
Well, he could have protected himself that was the NFL's fault.
If you go back to the 2022 concussions, he was falling. He got hit and the first one, I think he was pushed and was falling backwards and then landed and he had the whiplash. Mm. There's no way to control that, you know? It's just the way that he took the jujitsu on how to fall properly. I think it was Tua and all of that stuff. But when he needed to slide. It's a decision he made, but the NFL can't prevent all of this from, they can do some of it, the guardian caps, etc., but they can only do so much before they're just not able to do anything. It's just the game.
If you look at that play, Damar Hamlin's not even acting like he thinks he needs to hit Tua. Tua pretty much just throws his head into the abdomen of Damar Hamlin. It was like he just didn't protect himself. And that stinks because that's a really hard, we talked about this. Maybe the game moves in slow motion for Patrick Mahomes, but for most NFL players, everything's happening at an incredible rate of speed, and you're asking someone in a moment when they're trying to make a play to do this. But I would tell him the same thing you would tell a lot of other people. That's a play that when you're trying to get another 6 inches, I'm not surprised to see people making the AFC championship game on a chance to go to a Super Bowl. Week two? Down 3 touchdowns? Down 2 touchdowns? No.
But again, this is why I think it's tough in that spot. It sounds so easy for us on the outside in that particular play too. Cause they have a slide rule. Should he have slid? But it's very easy for us to say like, just slide. Yeah. Your instincts take over. I mean, he's been a competitive athlete his entire life. He's played at the highest level possible for the sport he loves. And it's very easy for us to say like, dude, you're not going to win the game anyway. So just slide. Sure, in hindsight, of course he should have done that.
Yeah.
But in that exact moment, you're not trained that way.
I know.
And that's the challenge. This is it's very complex, I think, because the immediate surface reaction I had is probably like a lot of people, which is, all right, you should never play again. Just take your money and be done. But it's not that simple, I think, if you're in his shoes.
No.
Should his family have a conversation? If I was, you know, he's got a couple kids. Like, if you're his wife, you would think she should tell him, hey, honey, never play again.
We got millions
of
dollars.
I don't think it's that simple when you're in that exact moment. And it's really, really tough. And it's sad to see because anytime you see that reaction, which we've seen now a couple times for him, that is a really scary thing for anybody to see. And he's very fortunate to this day that he's still walking. He's still, let's be real, is probably going to have health consequences, whether he retires today or plays 5 more years, just based off of the amount of concussions he's had, period. I mean, we hear from players that are in their 50s or 60s now that maybe had 1 or 2 concussions, and they talk about the side effects that they deal with, let alone Tua, where his body obviously has had a more severe reaction visibly in the moment than other players. and you feel terrible for him. But if he continues to play, there's a chance that a year from now, you hope not, but a year from now or something, or 2 years from now or three, whatever, if he's still playing, like, this is going to happen again to him, most likely. And we're going to do the same conversation again until when? Until he can't walk?
Well, yeah, they were talking about on Nightcap last night. They were recapping the game, and I think Shannon Sharp alluded to it that it's almost like a boxer. If you get knocked out once, you're more susceptible to getting a knockout again. If you get a concussion, you're a little bit more susceptible to getting a concussion again because your brain's damaged. Your brain's damaged, essentially. You're not as protected.
Right.
Before, and now we're talking about three instances.
Four, really. I mean, there's an undocumented two years ago.
Three in particular that stand out where your body is showing that it's got the concussion.
Yeah.
And it's very concerning, and it makes you uneasy watching it. I think he's going to have the conversation, but Bob and Dusty brought up a good point on Roundtable is, like you were saying, Gold, it's hard for you to walk away from a game that you've loved so much. Plus, also, if you think about the other aspect of it, we see players who have fine careers but get done with football, and they don't know what to do. They don't find themselves. You know, maybe Tua has a future in coaching, potentially, if he still wants to be around the game. Who knows? But you don't want to tell
the analyst
work. You don't want to tell the player that, hey, there's a coaching job for you potentially in the future. As a player, you don't want to hear that, I guess, which is where, as you guys have said, that makes the decision really, really difficult. For Tua to make.
So for the time being, just on the football end, Skylar Thompson is going to be their quarterback, and it changes how you maybe viewed the AFC. I don't know, some of you maybe looked at the Dolphins as a playoff team or a fraud or whatever. One thing I think we do take out of the game, though, remember, before the Tua injury, this was a Bills team that was kicking their ass. This was not just the Tua injury
thing.
Yeah,
that had nothing to do with the injury.
On the football side of things, the Buffalo Bills have been really impressive. Through 2 weeks, through 2 weeks, short week to go on the road to be that dominant. And it's not like
Josh Allen.
Yesterday we had Ross Tucker on. You asked him the question, like, hey, is Josh Allen going to have to just basically will his team to victory all year? Last night, that was James Cook. He only threw 19 passes. Their defense
only had like 150 yards.
Their defense gets points for them directly. Multiple interceptions.
Yeah, they look scarier than I thought they were going to. As you know, I had predicted Miami to win the division. Now, look, if I knew Tua was going to get hurt, things are different, obviously. But no matter what, Miami was losing that game last night.
Now it looks like it's Bills or Jets. I mean,
even the Jets, like, I'm still not serious about them. So, like, once again, I feel like we're barreling towards a Buffalo Bills AFC East title. They look like they gelled a little faster than I was expecting. I think what stands out is I still don't know what they are offensively because Josh Allen willed them to victory in game one, didn't need it in game two. Keon Coleman stunk, but Khalil Shakir was a little better. So like, then they're still not using Kincaid. So it's like what they are offensively, I don't know, but I do know that they're going to be a fight with Josh Allen. I know like Drew said this, and I'm not as sure about it with the Bengals. He said that if they have Joe Burrow, their window's always open. I'm not sure about that with the Bengals. I'll be honest. There are things I have questions about organizationally that I'm not sure that that's the case. I'm about to lock that in for Buffalo. That is just as long as Josh Allen is the healthy starting quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, they are going to be one of the three or four or two best teams in the AFC. Because that's what it looked like last night.
No, I'm with you. I mean, when we did our divisional picks, that was one of my reasons why I thought they could maybe still win the division. It's just that, like, I know everybody's worried about the wide receiver room, and they're going to eventually have a game where the Bills win by throwing the ball, and Keon Coleman's going to have to step up. They haven't needed that quite yet.
Keon Coleman had zero catches?
Right, and Khalil Shakir had, like, five catches or whatever. And he looks like their number one wide receiver right now. It's 2 weeks into the season.
He looks like their chain mover.
Is irrelevant. And as well in that offense.
Curtis Samuel hasn't.
Is he on the team?
Yeah. He hasn't done anything. But so I'm with you. I agree. That was part of my thought process with them to win the division, that when you have Josh Allen, your window is never closed. I really believe that. And I heading into the season, you know, we gave our rankings of quarterbacks, whatever. I think he is the second best quarterback in the league. And we'll see how the season progresses. But
now, the fact that
a Chiefs perspective, though, the Bills have never stood in the Chiefs' way at any point. They faced him in one AFC title game. They have faced him three times in the playoffs. And which way did that go every time? Patrick Mahomes is the victor. So, like, it's hard to be like, yeah, they're a player in the AFC. But do I quake in fear that the Bills are coming? Honestly, no.
No, I mean, nothing changes.
They've never been a problem for Kansas City.
To your point, though, as long as he's healthy, which he's only missed one game, I think, in his career, which is pretty outstanding for him, actually, the way that he plays. But to your point, the Bills are always there. They're always in the conversation. They seem to, yes. Even when we think that they're not going to be in the conversation, they're still there. Where maybe Josh Allen gets by Patrick Mahomes, or maybe he didn't even have to play Patrick Mahomes. Somehow he's able to just get to a Super Bowl and get it done.
I'll be honest. That comment, currently that does not exist. You are not allowed to go through the playoffs in the AFC and not play Patrick Mahomes at least once to get there, right? Every quarterback has to play Patrick Mahomes
as of now, yes. But I think to your point, Cody, he's always in. I think the window is open. It makes sense making that comment because it's not like, I mean, when's the last time the Bills missed the playoffs?
I mean, they've won the division like six times.
I was going to say, so I don't know if they missed it in his, I mean, in
Josh Allen's career, they have not.
It's fair to say it's open.
To me, all that's changed 2 weeks into the season is if you were someone that didn't think they were going to win the division or you thought they were going to miss the playoffs, that's, to me, all that probably has changed in 2 weeks. Like, if you already thought they were winning the division, to me, they have just kind of solidified that
point.
I don't believe now they are the biggest challenger to the Chiefs or anything like that suddenly just 2 weeks into the season. But if you thought they were somebody that was going to fall off, well, then now your opinion has changed. But if you believe they were still going to kind of be one of those top three, four teams, well, that's what they are. To me, that's what they've shown. In the AFC, they're one of those top three or four teams. They haven't vaulted as the number two to Kansas City just like that. Yeah. They're going to play each other later on this year. In November, we'll see where both teams are at that point. But it has been impressive. And last night to go on the road was an impressive win. We'll get to the Chiefs here and the rest of the NFL in about 15 minutes or so on this Red Friday. But the Royals, after an off day, get set to play the Pittsburgh Pirates a little bit later on today in the game, of course, right here on 96.5 The Fan. A little early, remember, out east. So do you like the like 5:30 starts?
Love it. Well, then to watch the game, and then I can still turn on some college football if I want to watch K-State and KU tonight. Yeah. I can still put that on. The Royals game will be over by 8:30. I'll still have like a whole half of football to put on.
We're at the point, though, where I think we can start looking at potential playoff matchups. This team is making the playoffs, and there's not many games to go. We have 2 weeks left. Two weeks left in this bad boy. And you can start mapping out, okay, this team's currently lead. So, okay, they would get a bye, and that means they could play them in a best of seven. We can start doing that game. And I think right now, as things are currently constructed, knowing who is healthy, what players are hurt for other teams and all that, and how they fared maybe at times this season against your team, what your strength is, I do think if we were to pick the matchup you want, well, of course you'd want the bye, win the division. Duh. That's probably not happening.
Duh. But
team-wise, I think out of the Astros and the Yankees as potential first-round matchups, I think the Orioles are the team you would prefer. You know, the Astros, I think we've all recognized where they have been at since really early June, a much different team than what they were April, May. They have the track record. They still have some of those same pieces for the run. I think they've been playing like one of the better teams in baseball to go with the Royals. I want nothing to do with the Astros, I'll be honest. To me, it's whether or not you want the Yankees or the Orioles. And because of Soto and Judge back-to-back in the lineup, I'll just tell you, I'll go ahead and take the Orioles. They have some starting pitching injuries now. Corbin Burns has been really, really good, but they've got some other injuries in their rotation. I'd rather play the Orioles.
By a mile. So I asked around, some people who work inside the Royals organization and other organizations and people who cover the sport nationally. And they try to convince me that it is a real risk to start making your plans in this regard or wishing or wanting for things when you actually haven't technically secured a playoff spot. I actually think that that's wrong. You've secured a playoff spot. Act like it. Like, I understand that it's not 100% or whatever the hell it is. On FanGraphs this morning, I bet it's 93%. Yeah. They're five games up on the last wild. They're a game and a half up on the Twins, but five games up on anybody who could catch them with 15 games to play. None of these teams are finishing with a better record, that much better. Do you realize, and this is the part with it, the Royals have the second best record in the American League after the All-Star break. The only team with a better record after the All-Star break is the Tigers.
Just like we all predicted.
They have a better record than the... This comes with a seven-game losing streak. They have a better record in the second half than the Yankees, the Orioles, the Astros, all these teams. So if you're letting me handpick the team that they're facing in the playoffs, give me Baltimore. I'm 100% with you. I can't believe it's funny enough. I think the answer should be the team you want to face the least is the Yankees. Like, you should want, you should really want the Yankees to win the division so that you can avoid him as long as possible. But I fear the Astros, like you, even more than the Yankees. We talk about this in Kansas City, and I think it would be unfair to make this point if we didn't say that the Astros are just like the Chiefs. All they do is win AL championships.
I had to make sure this was from a real account, and it is. We have some breaking news in the NFL. According to Jordan Schultz, the Chiefs are placing Hollywood Brown on IR. He's going to undergo surgery now to repair his dislocated SC joint. After multiple imaging studies, it was determined, although he has felt better, his injury was not healing correctly. Without corrective surgery, he would risk a more serious long-term injury. The surgery is scheduled for Monday in Colorado. The Chiefs will monitor his rehab progress throughout the season. So
dang.
That just completely changes the Chiefs' offensive outlook.
Changes everything. And now we think about Xavier Worthy and the type of season that he might have to have for this team. It's way different viewpoint. We all knew that he was trending towards not playing on Sunday because of the limited practices, right? Or not practicing. But we thought maybe, all right, Atlanta or New Orleans in a couple weeks, or the Chargers in a couple weeks. But that's from Jordan Schultz. Hollywood Brown going to IR. And that, of course, is a huge development in this wide receiver room. And if you're Xavier Worthy, well, now it sets up for you to have an unbelievable season. The opportunity is there.
Yeah, if you bet his over-under, it's good.
All of a sudden.
Well, also, for Hollywood, it sucks because this is more of a prove-it year. You know, this is one of those prove-it deals.
I'll be honest, this is really bad news as far as your expectations for the Chiefs offense, because I don't think that it means they can't play good offensive football. We saw that in week one, but let's not pretend like every conversation leading up to this point was, hey, they look like a good offense, but just you wait. Once Hollywood Brown enters the conversation and we start cycling through this, then wait and see, because they can run Hollywood and Xavier together and underneath on Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice in the perfect sculpted offense with Pacheco to cap the thing off. Now they're going to be, once again, relying on a rookie wide receiver to have actual production for them, or have to go back to the well and start counting on Justin Watson and Mecole Hardman and players who can certainly play for them and make do and get by, but did not make them a dangerous team. I thought the addition of Hollywood Brown, specifically his skill set, could logically provide them with a different outlook on this stuff. And so if you look at it, I think that this is still a pretty big injury for them, especially because they're in the most difficult part of their schedule over the next month. They have to score against some of these teams.
For those wondering, just what is the IR designation in season mean? It's different than preseason. So if you were placed on IR before the season, your season is potentially over. However, if you're placed during the season, which is the circumstance here, you need to miss a minimum of 4 games. So if you're looking at a timeline, 4 games from now. So at one point we thought maybe he'd be available by week 3. When's the Chiefs bye? Week 5?
6.
6.
Like that,
so now we're probably talking week 7 at the earliest, maybe, for Hollywood Brown to come back. This is not a season-ending injury necessarily. The surgery, according to Jordan Schultz's reporting, was, hey, it wasn't healing properly. This could affect him long-term. Need to get this corrected. Not only for this year for him, but for his own personal well-being long-term in the NFL and things like that. But the Chiefs schedule, I was just trying to map it out, Cody. So it's four games. I don't know if this one we won't even count necessarily on Sunday. I would almost count 4 after this week.
Yeah, because he's having the surgery on Friday
or Monday.
So like, if he's having it on Monday, this week doesn't count towards the 4-week. I mean, it counts towards the designation, but in my opinion, not towards the healing.
So Falcons would be 1. Let's just call that as 1. Chargers 2. Saints 3. Niners October 20th 4. Then the Raiders October 27th. Maybe he's back for the Raiders game in Vegas the 27th.
You got to remember, between the Saints and the 49ers is a bye.
Yeah.
So the Falcons, Chargers, Saints, bye. 49ers makes it 5 weeks, and then the Raiders. At this point, look, Andy Reid will talk today at 1. We don't normally carry Andy Reid at 1 o'clock on a Friday because he usually speaks for 2 minutes. We will, during the fan club, carry Andy Reid so you can hear what he has to say. And if you're just tuning in, Hollywood Brown, according to Jordan Schultz, it now has to have surgery on that injury as it wasn't healing correctly. He's being placed on the injured reserve, which means he has to be out at least 4 weeks for the Chiefs. I'd start putting him on the Charles Omenihu track. Like, ideally, I'd be getting them back around the same time. Late October, early November, maybe in that range. And just as long as they can find enough offense, which I don't think they'll have no offense. They're already a better unit.
Correct.
Rashee Rice has stepped up in a big way already. I still think Travis Kelce's really good. And in week 1, Xavier Worthy gave you some, okay, maybe this guy's going to matter stuff, but it definitely hurts their offense. I think it's foolish to pretend it does.
Sure, and for this period of time that he's out, whether it's a month, whether it's 2 months, whatever it ends up actually being, you're thinner at wide receiver, naturally, right? So we can mention Xavier Worthy and how great he looked week one, and he, heck of an opportunity now for him to really have a great rookie season because he's going to get plenty of snaps. But if somebody else were to get hurt now you're thinner. If all of a sudden Rice was out for a game for something, if Worthy himself had a hamstring injury pop up, you just you lost the depth aspect. And
you can suffer less of an injury now.
The biggest beneficiary, of course, from Hollywood Brown now being out even longer is the guy who was already benefiting snap wise, and that's Xavier Worthy. After that, you know, are they going to need more from somebody else we didn't think? Is it Justin Watson now again, where he's just going to be the guy, or is it Mecole Hardman? Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, this is why you sign veterans back to your team that know the system just in case. Unpredictable. This is an unpredictable injury. We thought maybe when they signed him, Hollywood Brown could miss time because he's missed time in his career. This was a setback, clearly. They thought this was something that was healing. Whether it was misleading or not, they acted like things were healing properly. Clearly, that was not the case, according to the reporting from Jordan Schultz, that he was feeling better, and so that's great. But the injury was not healing correctly, and so the corrective surgery is needed to avoid risking a more serious injury.
What sucks, and of course you couldn't know that it wasn't going to heal correctly, is damn, you could have had that surgery and been like 2 weeks away now, right?
Well,
depending on how long.
They probably wanted to give it some time to see how it continued to play out.
And you didn't know. Like, we've all, not all, but like any of us who've had broken bones, you go back in, they do the imaging, and they're like, healing up just fine, or, not exactly going the way that it should look, or isn't looking the way that it should look. And so, yeah, they're going to have to probably negotiate without this. Now, I'll say the same thing that applies to Rashee Rice that absolutely did help them in the postseason last year is that the beneficiary of Xavier Worthy is obvious for an individual perspective. But if because for the next 8 weeks, he's the man, he's option number three in the offense, he's option number four in the offense, if he is ahead, as far as ahead as I think he is, as Rashee Rice was last year, well, then by the time the postseason's up, not going to have to worry about Xavier Worthy being up to speed, not going to have to worry about bringing him along in the season. They'll do that in the middle of the year. By the time the later part of the season hits and they're playing Buffalo in November or some other teams in January, you will have your full idea of what Xavier Worthy contributes to the offense by the time that you get there. No guessing game by then.
We'll continue to react to the breaking news in the last couple minutes from Jordan Schultz that the Chiefs are placing Hollywood Brown on IR. He's going to undergo surgery to repair a dislocated SC joint as it has not been healing the proper way. And we'll react to some of your texts as well about what this actually means for the team this year as we're talking about the breaking Chiefs news right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Back here on Cody and Gold, coming up in 10 minutes, we are going to head out to Cincinnati and check in with Ben Baby. He's the ESPN Bengals reporter. Reaction in Cincinnati to the first week of the season. Also, what has been happening with Jamar Chase's comments, Cam Taylor Britt's comments. We'll play those for you in the 11 o'clock hour as well. But the news in the last 15 minutes or so from Jordan Schultz, NFL insider, that once again, if you're just joining us, that Hollywood Brown is headed to IR. That's because he's undergoing surgery to repair a dislocated SC joint. That's after multiple imaging studies determined that while he's been feeling better, the injury was not healing properly. And without that surgery, they believe he would risk a more serious long-term injury. So on Monday, according to Jordan Schultz, surgery is scheduled in Colorado. And the Chiefs, of course, will monitor his rehab progress throughout the season. The timeline, you're talking about 4 weeks at minimum. So if you just want to take a peek at the schedule, you're looking at maybe that Niners game, best case scenario, post bye week when they play the 49ers, that Hollywood Brown could be available. So we're now going from an injury that occurred during preseason that was going to keep him out, we thought, three games, maybe he'd be back. Now you're talking about 7 or 8 games potentially.
He's going to miss at least half the season is probably the opinion now. He's already missed one. He's getting ready to miss two anyway. Then he has surgery on Monday. Then, like you said, a minimum of 4 weeks to come back. You got to think it's going to be a minimum of half the season at this point, which stinks because he was a decent size part of their plan. And also, this is, and I hate the designation between the two that's like, well, this one's a freak injury. He's injury prone. And when you sign injury prone players, they get injured sometimes. And in Hollywood's case, even though this did seem more of a freak injury, and he certainly couldn't control that his body didn't heal in the way that they were expecting for the injury, it's just another thing piled onto the poor kid when he's trying to get on the field and make himself a bunch of money. And so this was supposed to be a prove it year, get himself paid year. And we go back to the same thing happened with Juju. I would tell you that this increases the likelihood that Hollywood Brown is back for another year in Kansas City.
Assuming
because he's going to be looking for another 1 year deal in order to get his payday.
Assuming he plays and is effective when he comes back from this particular injury. I get what you're saying. Like, he had an opportunity if he was healthy to have a massive season, I thought, and he would have set himself up to get paid in the offseason. Maybe in Kansas City, if not by somebody else. And yeah, if you're going to miss half a season, your numbers, of course, are going to be much smaller than you had thought you could have had. And that changes how people view you. Plus, you're going to have, to your point, another season where you didn't make it through a full year, let alone maybe not going to play more than 8 games. We'll see as the season progresses for Hollywood Brown. So yeah, you feel terrible for the guy. Is this team screwed without him? Of course not. The wide receiver room is better. It is still a blow. It's not just a shoulder shrug and we just move on and act like it's a nothing injury. This is a guy they thought was their number two.
Screwed.
No, this was a guy that is their number two wide receiver heading in the season, we thought. And now that player is going to miss significant time. So it's a setback for the wide receiver room and the explosive offense. I think that we thought that, you know, could they be a top five offense? There's a chance it still is there, but it hurts the cause. We all are excited about Xavier Worthy, but you're now asking the rookie to carry a lot more weight than we thought.
He's a rookie. You know? He's a rookie in his second game in the NFL. And I think we go through this every year because the Chiefs will get some rookie wide receiver or there'll be other ones. And we have to kind of go through these numbers to remind you the level of impact most rookie wide receivers have in their offense. Last year, there were 3 guys that had a real impact for their team, I would say. Like a massive impact. There were other guys who were good. Puka Nacua with 1,400 yards. The next closest was Rashee Rice at 938 and Jordan Addison at 931. But there were so many guys who were just like Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 600, Dontayvion Wicks at less than 600, Quentin Johnson at 431. And while I've already seen more out of Xavier Worthy than they got out of Quentin Johnson at any point last year, if you're the Chargers, before it just felt like, hey, come in here and help us out for a week, Xavier. Now we rely on you. And hopefully, I already told you, the one thing that gives me a little bit of confidence in this is if you had asked me, and I got a side-by-side comparison, who they trusted more, week one last year at wide receiver, this year or this year for Xavier Worthy. It's Xavier Worthy by a mile. They played him 68% of the snaps in week one. I told you they did not get to that number with Rashee Rice until week 9 last year. So they're far better positioned than they ever were last year in this situation. I just was looking forward to the unstoppable juggernaut of a force. Yeah. And now I gotta set my expectations back a little, not bury him. I don't think the Chiefs are losing every game now because a guy who missed week one isn't available to him. But yeah, I just don't think pretending this injury doesn't hurt him is not accurate.
For the next, now at least minimum 4 games, I mean, the peak, what we thought the peak of the offense could be, we may not see that till the second half of the season now. That's what it means. The full force, high-flying offense, we saw a glimpse of it last week. We're going to, I'm sure, see a glimpse of it on Sunday against Cincy. But when everybody was healthy and together, which doesn't happen much in an NFL season anyway, but at the beginning of the year, you would like it to be the case. If that is the position they're in, we're going to have to wait till the second half of the season. If somebody else in the wide receiving room gets hurt, as I mentioned, I think the depth now, of course, is more tested. You know, that's the thing. It's more of a priority when we talk about what other injury can they withstand. Can they be all right if all of a sudden Rashee Rice is out for 2 games for something or Xavier Worthy? Like, that's where it becomes dicier. But no, they're doesn't change anything. Like, we already knew he wasn't playing this Sunday, so it has no impact on this Sunday's game. No.
Doesn't change my opinion on what was going to happen.
But I think someone says we're being negative. I don't know how we're being negative.
I'm sorry. What's the positive of person just had surprise surgery is out for months? You know what? There is a positive. I'm glad you're going to get to spend more time with your family. Catching up on the books, maybe. Or the Netflix show you thought you were going to miss. I mean, a wide receiver who had slotted in as the second wide receiver on the Chiefs roster going into the year, who you thought up until 10 hours ago, or an hour ago, was going to be available to you sometime in the next couple of weeks, is now likely to miss months. Months. Yeah, I think it's bad for the Chiefs. Now, here's the great news, if you want the positive. This is the only injury the Chiefs are dealing with right now. most NFL teams are dealing with injury. T. Higgins, again, will not practice for Cincinnati. That means he's going to be out for the game against him on Sunday. Teams have more significant injuries, either at quarterback between Tua or Jordan Love, have more injuries accumulative overall. And yeah, if it was going to happen at a certain position, this is actually a position in which they can handle this loss immediately more than some others. They have more depth right now to absorb that than at any particular point.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean whatever your win total was for the Chiefs, it doesn't mean
that change
it doesn't
that
change
no.
a single thing of that. But the one thing we probably haven't mentioned enough, though, when we've mentioned the timeline for everything, is worse. He is eligible. Let me click eligible after four games. It's a key. Let's make sure we are eligible.
Oh, he won't play for
We're saying the earliest he could return is the Niners game. It doesn't mean he's returning the Niners game. He could miss another 4 weeks after that. You know what I mean? We don't know.
He could legitimately miss 8 to 12 weeks. We're not sure.
The fact that he's going on IR obviously is a huge bummer for the situation for him individually and ultimately what this offense fully could be. But yeah, if you thought they were a 14-win team, I don't think suddenly you think they're a 12-win team now because of this.
No, but let's talk revised expectations for Xavier Worthy. We had talked about his yardage total a million times before the year, and that was with different information. Right now, if you had to guess, and I'll take your phone calls, 913-586-7965. In just a second, I guess. Sorry, I forgot that we had a guess coming up. 913-586-7965 here in just a moment. What is your updated yardage prediction for Xavier Worthy? Going into the year, I would have settled for 500. I'd have been a happy man taking my 5 touchdowns and 500 yards to the bank, feeling great. What is your updated expectation yardage total for Xavier Worthy? Because I'll be honest, I am a lot closer, and this is tough because I know some of his yardage were rushing. I'm a lot closer to like a 750 all-purpose yard number for me now.
Well, the number we talked about preseason was receiving 750 and a half. That was the Vegas total over under 750 and a half. We both liked the under. We're like, hey, when Hollywood back healthy, the 65% of the snaps probably goes down a little bit.
Well, yeah, it goes to 40 or 45.
Here we are. We know those snaps are not going down anytime soon, assuming he stays healthy. So would I bet the under anymore? No. Does it mean I'm running to the book if I could and still bet the over 750 and a half? No. You know, does that make sense? Like, I'm not also now suddenly thinking he's going to have a guaranteed 800, 900 yard season. But boy, oh boy, I sure as heck wouldn't be betting the under anymore.
No, I just stay away from the bet. But do you think he's going to have 700?
I think he's like 800. Yeah. I think he's an 800 guy.
Which is a hell of a rookie year, 2 years in a row to have an 800 yard rookie, a 938 last year, another 800 yard one this year. That'd be massive.
I think 8-8. 800 yards, 8 touchdowns now.
That's a huge rookie year.
Well, he's got 2 already. He's got 2 of the touchdowns.
That'd have been
out.
The third best rookie year out of anybody in the class last year.
I think he's going to have the opportunity of the snaps. I mean, Hollywood Brown
I'm not calling you crazy. I'm just saying, like, that would be great news for the Chiefs.
Hollywood Brown could end up missing 10 plus games now for this football team this year. So the snap percentage for Worthy, we got to completely change our thought process. We'll get back to this obviously throughout the day today. If you're just joining us, the news from Jordan Schultz: Hollywood Brown placed on IR, going to undergo surgery after the shoulder has not healed the way they thought it would, unfortunately. So that's the latest on that front. But let's go out to Cincinnati and get the perspective from Cincy on this season. This injury doesn't impact Sunday's game because Brown was already not expected to play. But Ben Baby, ESPN national reporter, covers the Bengals, kind enough to give us some time. Ben, appreciate you working with us. Obviously, suddenly some breaking news here in Kansas City, but when you look at the Chiefs from your point of view and how these two teams match up, I don't know if you agree with us. We feel in Kansas City, at least, that this seems a little more uneven than some of the prior matchups.
Yeah, you know, I would tend to agree on paper, but I think the thing to keep in mind is I think that Lou Anarumo has done a good job over the years of knowing how to attack Patrick Mahomes, and there's so much familiarity between these teams, and Ja'Marr Chase said it best. You know, he had a ton of praise for Spags yesterday. Well, he did also say that they feel like they're the team to beat in the AFC still,
right.
which is a bold claim. He did have a ton of praise for Spags, and he said they scheme us as well as anybody. And I think he said maybe better than anybody in knowing how to stop them. And I think Lou Anarumo feels like they have a good idea on how to wrangle Mahomes as best one can. So even though I do think Kansas City is the infinitely better team at this point, it probably could be at the end of the year, I think it probably will be a closer game than we realize, just because both defensive coordinators know exactly what the other team is bringing offensively.
I feel like we always make it, Ben, like a few days into the week of Chiefs Cincinnati before eventually a Cincinnati player starts talking. What is it about the resistive urge? Like, right, eventually at some point, Jamar Chase is like, well, I got to say something about hating them eventually. Otherwise, this thing's not really on. Is it self-motivation? Is it just the heat between these two teams? Why do you think it is eventually that Cincinnati starts talking?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think Justin Reed started it a couple years ago, to be fair.
He did.
So, so that ended up trickling over and Hayden Hurst took exception. But I think what Reed said was pretty tame. I mean, listen, these guys jaw a ton on the field, and Jamar Chase said it best yesterday. He's like, I'm just going to wait until we, you know, if I'm going to talk trash, I'm going to do it on the field. I'm not going to do it in the middle of the week and get them riled up because the media will blow it up. I'll just wait until I can trash talk them to their face and then go from there. He says, I'm 4 years in now. I kind of understand it. I think, you know, he said it best, and Andre Yosivash even said it at the beginning of the week. And he goes, I think there's an understanding that, you know, we don't like those guys. They don't like us. And, you know, the mentality here is that they can, you know, that I think the coaching staff doesn't mind the confidence that they have. And quite frankly, you kind of need to have if you want to win at the highest level. And I think as long as they go out and play the way they need to, they don't say anything incredibly inflammatory. I don't think they mind that. That's kind of the sense we've gotten over the years. And, you know, I think it honestly makes it a really fun game. I think it's fun in sports when people don't like each other. They make it very clear they don't like each other. And these two teams obviously have a healthy disdain. But I think at the same time, there is a ton of respect. And, you know, as my colleague Jay Morrison yesterday pointed out from Pro Football Network, I think this is the most respectful I've seen Jamar, all things considered, going into the week. You know, Legarius isn't out there anymore. And so maybe he'll save that for when they play Tennessee this year. But, yeah, definitely no love lost between these squads.
When you look at, like, you'd mentioned the coaching stuff. At what point in Cincinnati are people starting to freak out over the idea that if Cincinnati does lose this game on Sunday, Zach Taylor will be 1-11 in the first 2 weeks of the season, kind of putting him behind the eight ball every single year?
Yeah, you know, it's like I almost feel like I'm in have deja vu every year. I imagine if they lose on Sunday, there's going to be a lot of questions about whether Zach Taylor should be the play caller, which is every year you can set my watch to it. On week two, they lose because I don't think he's won a week two game his entire tenure in Cincinnati. You know, you talk about them being 1-10 currently in the first 2 weeks. That was a week one win in 2021 against Minnesota, so they've lost every week two he's been here. So he's trying to reverse that trend. I think that, you know, it's pretty predictable at this point. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of the players, they were kind of confused as to why they have started slow again. And, you know, maybe it's just Joe Burrow not being healthy fully, which is still a very real thing. But, you know, they've shown the ability to go back and fight back from these slow deficits inside the locker room. Like y'all heard the players say, they still feel pretty optimistic about where they can go, and they feel like they're in a good spot. They feel like the Patriots loss was an anomaly, but, you know, having Kansas City week two, this is going to be a massive measuring stick game, whether they want to admit that or not.
We're talking to Ben Baby of ESPN. He covers Cincinnati, and Joe Burrow, I think too much was made about the whole water bottle video and everything, but but is he healthy? Like, honestly, like the wrist injury, do you guys in Cincinnati and in covering the team, is it the thought process that he is 100%?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, he stopped. I mean, he was asked point blank last week going in the Patriots game. And he indicated that, you know, he feels healthy, but he'll feel healthier as the season goes on, which was an indication that he's not really at 100%. And I kind of clarified that with him this week as well on the side. I said, listen, I'm interpreting that as you're not at 100% and you're hopefully getting better. And the one thing I did ask him about, I said, hey, are you having any issues with grip strength? And he said, yeah, you know, I feel like the grip strength is good at this moment. And I think he's just trying to feel it out, feel more comfortable. But, I have questions. I have, you know, given what we've seen, his inability to push the ball downfield, is that just a byproduct of him, like he said, having happy feet and just getting rushed in his process? Or is there something else that maybe is coming with the wrist issue? It may not be health. It may just be another aspect that we're not accounting for that he isn't divulging. Because to be quite honest, and, you know, I've said this on SportsCenter as well, you know, towards the end of training camp, we did not see him throw very many deep balls. In the joint practice with the Indianapolis Colts, the first team offense did not look that great. And so what we saw against the Patriots, you know, for people who were watching camp rationally, it was a continuation of what we saw. And so that is really my big question, is can they be better in that this week? And even if they lose, I think win or loss at this point, that's kind of a – where they're at. I am more concerned where how well Joe can push the ball downfield. And I think if he's able to do that, even in a defeat, that'll bode well for Cincinnati. If they go out and they lose and they still can't push the ball, then I think you're going to have a lot of questions about this team moving forward this season.
We're always looking at it from our perspective, so help me out. If Cincinnati is to win this game on Sunday, where is the area of the field you actually think they can take advantage of the Chiefs?
Oh, that's a good man. I really like that Kansas City defense. I think you can pick your spot. I mean, maybe you go try to see what you can get on the outside corner, see if you can get Andre Yosavash in a good matchup. What they're going to do with McDuffie, I think, is going to be interesting. Are they going to have him stay in the slot? Are they going to have him follow Jamore? I think not having Legarius Sneed there is going to be really fascinating to see how that secondary continues. And Zach Taylor had a ton of praise, and he said basically, gave Brett Beach a big shout-out in that they went out and they draft a similar type of players to be in that secondary, and their back seven is so coordinated, and that's what makes it such a challenge. So, maybe they can try to run the ball and soften things up for those deep balls, but when you look at it, Kansas City has, when in the game that they won when Joe was healthy, they were able to sack him a ton and limit his downfield attempts, and for me, I think that's the key to the game. If you can kind of neutralize that pass rush, allow things to develop downfield, that has historically been why the Bengals have beaten Kansas City when Joe's been healthy, and when they haven't, it's because he hasn't been able to do that, and Chris Jones and that front have been really disruptive.
By all accounts, their offensive line played pretty well on Sunday. Look, I didn't watch every second of the game. Is there still a problem with Joe walking himself into some of his own sacks?
Yeah, I would say it's a way to put it. Yeah, I think that those sacks, I don't know how much I put on the offensive line. We actually had them graded 13th in pass block win rate in week one, which is quite frankly some of their better weeks that I've seen on paper in recent years. I thought the line played pretty well. Trent Brown had his moments up and down, but I think he gave them solid play at right tackle. I thought the pass protection was good enough for them to do what they needed to do. And I think Joe kind of admitted that, and you've heard admissions of that throughout the week. So, talking to guys, talk to Cordell Wilson extensively, and they know they've got to make sure that they keep hands on Chris Jones at all times and make sure he doesn't disrupt the game. I think, when you look back at the AFC Championship game that Kansas City won, Chris Jones was just so disruptive, and Carlos Dunlap as well, familiar face here, was big in that game as well. And so I think they know they've got to get the pass rush neutralized and give Joe a shot at getting settled and being able to attack downfield like they have when they've been successful.
Ben Baby, ESPN reporter, covers Cincinnati. As he said, you see him on SportsCenter all the time, and I'm sure we'll see you on SportsCenter this week in Kansas City. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you all.
There you go. Ben Baby with us here on 96.5 The Fan, discussing, I think, what everybody wondered a little bit, like with Joe Burrow in the health, acknowledging that he doesn't even think he's 100%, and maybe that's what's leading to some of this as well. And they're playing early on in the season. Could he get to health in November? Sure, but it's another slow start for Cincinnati, perhaps with an 0-2 start if they lose on Sunday.
Told you, it was the theme of Week One: unhealthy quarterbacks not ready to play. By the way, more information is continuing to come out. If you missed the news earlier, Hollywood Brown is set to have surgery after his injury was not healing correctly. But now the more concerning part of it. Pretty much every single person who's reporting on it, Ari Myrov, our friend Matt Verderam, and others, are reporting that this is not a short injury, that this is looking more in line with something like a 12-week injury, as in maybe he'll be back for the end of this season if things go well situation. So that 4-week IR stint is likely to be a lot longer than that. I would tell you right now, based on all the reporting, it is likely Hollywood Brown is going to miss a majority of the regular season for the Kansas City Chiefs. So the offense they have right now is likely to be their offense a huge chunk of the way, which means this Sunday and others, we're probably going to start evaluating their offensive play a little bit differently, because we're going to start looking at it as this is the sum of their parts, not a part of the whole. And that's where I think the calculus is going to change.
That's the shift. That's definitely the shift. And you really, as a fan, and I'm sure as an organization, you have to proceed as if Hollywood Brown's not playing a regular season game for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's how you have to proceed, I think, at this point.
Yeah, that there's
chance. When you watch that, you have to assume he's not playing a game for this football team. Best case scenario, you're hoping he's back week 15. He starts to get up to speed and he's an added weapon. All of a sudden, like, wow, this offense has been great. And now they get Hollywood
Brown. They've been a top five offense and now there's just a player here? Cool.
And now they have him for the playoff run. The dream scenario at this point is that the offense is still looking like they're top five without him. And then he adds another boost. That's what you hope. Yeah. But to not have, if I would have told you before the season, in training camp that, hey, by the way, they're not going to have Hollywood Brown the, you know, maybe 14 weeks of the season, which is a realistic possibility now. I think you would have been more concerned there versus now because we saw week one. And that's what I'm trying to balance out. Like,
I saw them play good offense without Hollywood Brown, but it's 1 week.
Right, and that's why this Sunday is another big test, because if the offense can be high-flying and Worthy can look explosive again and Rashee Rice can eat the way he did, then I think once again we're going to come in and say, all right, it sucks that you don't have Hollywood Brown, but they can make this thing work, no problem. For some of you, maybe you're already sold after 1 week. I get it. We all still
I typically like to see a little bit more.
I think the only change for me is I still think they can be a top five offense. And in week one, you watch that and you're like, yeah, that looks like a team that could be a top five offense. But as the season progresses, you know, at some point, somebody else in the wide receiver room is probably going to miss a game. I mean, that's just usually how the NFL works. Sure. Somebody else going to have a little handy.
And that week, Juju Smith-Schuster is going to need to get a couple first downs for this team.
Do they have enough in the receiver room to go 14 weeks without Hollywood Brown and still be a pretty damn good offense and still be on track to win 13 plus games? All that is still in play. It's just the wiggle room that you had with the depth and things like that. You're putting way more on the rookie now.
It's all of that is still in play just as long as week one told the truth. Rashee Rice is a true number one wide receiver who's going to have 1,200 yards. Travis Kelce's still great. And Xavier Worthy is maybe a future star.
Coming up next, we'll get to the 11 o'clock hour. We'll hear what Ja'Marr Chase had to say about his team standing in the AFC. And we will continue to bring you the latest on the injury news as Hollywood Brown is headed to IR.